This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
And I will invite you to stand up, please. We have a roving microphone for the benefit of yourselves and our web viewers. So I'm hopeful that we have some challenging questions. If not, I'm going to ask my one about digital. Do we have any questions in the room? Yes, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and stand up, please, so that we can see you. Thank you.
Hello, Hilary Rimmer from Birmingham Met College in Birmingham, obviously. I was thinking along the same lines as yourself in terms of the digital attraction. Obviously, the challenge is a lot of it to do with funding and the sheer numbers. And I've heard a lot of talk about blended learning with our learners. I just wanted to know where innovation and blended learning is going to go, where learners maybe at home don't have broadband, don't have PCs, and don't have apps on their iPhones.
Okay, should we start? Tim, is that you to start?
Yeah, okay. I mean, let me start by sort of conceding some points. If we're looking for a join between Karen's side of the house with numeracy and mine with literacy, obviously it centres around this area of digital competence. That's the first sort of educational point, because they are, in a way, skills which bridge the two. Second point, how do you get hold of people? Well, I think the answer is you have to make it available to people. You may have to lend it, and things get lost, and you know that, and that's something you probably have to take on the chin, but you have to condition that. And I don't think people are, you know, unable to look after things if they're encouraged to do it properly. But clearly, you're right. All the presumption in government is you read it on the website, that's the only way it's going to be. But remembering that some of it is very much easier. I did actually complete my pension application online, and it became quite clear to me that only a very small number of people did so. And I asked how many, and the answer is it's 2%. Partly, I may say the funny thing at the end was when I finished and submit, you know, collapse. I get a little note saying, please mail in your birth certificate, which is touching. Not scan in, mail in. Right. So there's an area that you can, I mean, if you look at your vehicle excise license, assuming you've got the money to pay for it, it is actually much easier online, so I do it like that. It's great. Where you integrated, I'm not sure, and I don't think our inquiry will sort of say this is the degree of blended learning, IT competence that you have to fit in. What I'm saying to you is clearly within our definition there will have to be some understanding. People in the modern world function with a digital competence which accompanies their other basic skills, does not replace them. I mean, you know, some of you may have seen the sort of rather good Microsoft film on this, and we debated, you know, whether we put it as a sort of visual aid. And we decided it was a bit too much one way, and because it might have implied that you don't need your basic ability to read and write and to use the pencil or whatever. And I think the second thing you need to do is to look quite hard at the use of technology, what you might call remedially, but as a resource in assisting people to learn. As I said, if there's a dyslexia problem, you can do things with, which is not the general one, I don't want to imply that. You can do things with colour coding. I remember, to use one more anecdote, my wife and I going to a university and looking at business German, and she is actually a reasonably good German speaker, much better than I am. And I annoyed her intensely on the computer program by doing as well as she did. But, because it was easier for me, because I learnt it verbally. And what I'm really saying, I think, is we need to rehearse that in a simple way, not as a displacement activity, but as part of the offer.
I mean, I've just had a you, Karen, for a view on from Ofsted's perspective, what your expectations were. Before I do that, I just wanted to temper that by saying, is there a view now with changes to the way the funding is working where it's not protected under Skills for Life, and there'll be lots of individuals who will be expected to pay for IT courses where in the past on certain types of inactive, as they're called, benefits, they won't have to. What's any views on the impact that it might have, and then, as I say, on where Ofsted come from in the context of expectations with regard to the IT literate skills?
No, absolutely. I mean, two sides of that. First of all, we consider the access. And absolutely the point that you made is that some people don't have access. And again, an example in a prison, what a lot of prisons are doing, are that they actually are developing virtual learning campuses. And they're using that where they didn't before perhaps have a job club. They've said, oh, well, fine, we'll have one when our virtual learning campus starts gets going. But the concern that we have about that is the one that you indicated in your question. What you are, how many people will you be excluding? They might have the access, but they might not have the skills. And therefore, if you're saying all the job clubs are going to take place on the virtual learning campus, but you can't use it, then you are being excluded and not having that facility. That's just one side of it, but that's certainly something to think about on the access. And indeed, if the libraries are closing, where people currently are relying on libraries, our expectation is that when people have a strategy and a policy to include digital learning, is that they make sure it is inclusive, and that they are giving equal opportunities and they're not excluding people in implementing that strategy. That's the first thing to say. The second one on blended learning, I think that what we would see is the use of computers would be as a learning tool that we've seen it. This is, again, the electronic worksheets. Maybe fun, but not quite sure how well they lead to permanent learning. But the learning tool and the application tool, where you are using, like, filling out the pension forms. We actually, our expectations would see that as one. That would be where the digital technology to actually develop and practice the skills. There are all sorts of things. If you look today and you go into a news website, you will see percentages, you will see graphs, yes, you will see all sorts of things, as well as complicated language, where you actually need to be able to learn through that context.
Okay, thank you. Yes, if we could have the microphone, if you wouldn't mind standing for us. Thank you.
Linda Carlisle from representing WJEC. I'd just like to make the point that I completely agree with that. I think you've made really, really good points. What you may not realise is that there are many areas in Britain that still don't have access to broadband. I live in one. And there's no point in loaning equipment and teaching these skills if people can't actually get on the internet at home. Please help us. You know, there have been lots of targets to have full coverage over the years, but it's not actually happening. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, as you said, I think fibre optics and things are planned, but I totally hear what you're saying, and it's I think it's one of the biggest issues, isn't it, in terms of switching, is you can't really properly switch until everyone has access, and equality is clearly an important issue. No one should be disadvantaged. Any other questions? Yes, Simon at the front. Can we have a microphone for you?
Sorry, yes, this is Simon Boyd. I'm a publisher. I mean, just on the business of ICT skills for life, I mean, that was once sort of touted as a fourth skill, but it was never really supported by government. There was never any extra money, no qualifications developed, no support, really, and it came down ultimately to a sort of a fairly basic introduction on the web and how to use it. I don't know whether anything new is planned to give any sort of extra profile to it.
Are we aware? I mean, as part of the review, in both cases, as you've talked, I'm sure it's an area of interest. I mean, I come from a funding perspective, and since we've had the sort of the distributed electronic learning group back in 2000 and something about kind of IT skills and blended learning, it's never really taken off. And the usual excuse for that is that the funding system hasn't really made online learning, distance learning, hasn't really allowed it to flourish. And I think that's probably part of the issue with the IT learning, as well as that the only real economic way to deliver it in big numbers is to do it across the internet. But how do you fund it? Is that coming up in the reviews?
It won't be the major part of what we say, but I think the implication is that if you can entrench it within conventional programs, as it were, you may get more value for it, and you may find it easier within the funding model. I think one of our slight problems, and this is a more general comment, is you know, when we've picked out things like key skills and said, you know, isn't it important that people learn them, and you sort of take them out and ring fence them. Well, that ring fence breaks down, or there are other cost pressures, and you find you haven't been very clever. So I think we would see it as being more part of an integrated function than one that was a discrete, separate area of study.
Was there something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, certainly the providers that we work with, or a lot of the providers, we've actually tried to encourage them to find an integrated strategy using ICT. Now, obviously, the funding, which I'm not that familiar with, and I'm sure you can enlighten us, is an issue. But where you've got the opportunity to integrate skill development and use ICT as a motivator, if you like, to engage learners and get them to improve other skills at the same time, I think that's a strategy that lots of providers use. Now, in terms of blended learning, we've got responsibility for the Move On website, and that gets around 100,000 hits every month, which is a significant number. Now, there is evidence to show that where that's used, or the Move On site is used in a blended learning way, it does make a difference to learners' skill development. But the message that we get back all the time is that often when that's used in isolation, it can be quite demotivating for the learner, and they do need access to tutor support. So I think that's a strong message that comes out.
Thank you. We've had a question from Jan Higgins, who I believe is watching this from somewhere around the country. And her question is about progression, particularly from some of the lowest levels, pre-entry, entry level. And how do we ensure that there is enough money that we're not just paying for those that are a short distance from where they need to be? So if it takes 2 or 3 years of really intensive training, how do we ensure that they are prioritised and that we don't treat it as you've had entry level now, you can't have level one, or you have to pay for it? How can we ensure that those that need it the most might be the most expensive, but really get what they need?
You're looking at me.
who would like Helen? Let's go for Helen. Helen hasn't said anything.
Helen, come on.
No, but it's not a question that I'm in a good position to be able to give a reasonable answer.
Are you getting a feel that there is a willingness to continue to invest significantly in the numeracy literacy area?
I wouldn't like to say. I mean, I think the BIS review is underway, and I think we need to be getting those questions into those fora. It's absolutely clear from a lot of the research evidence that various kind of unintended consequences of what's gone on in the last few years has meant, as is implied in that question, that it's been the people who haven't got far to travel that have found it easier to get in, and that we have left behind the learners who need it most. And I think there's an understanding of that around, but in terms of quite what the solutions are to make sure that we are able to focus in constrained resources. I mean, my personal view would be that we need to be able to focus the resource on those that need it most, because the people who are in the top-up situation will probably get by one way or another, even if they haven't got the right piece of paper. But we need to be, you know, dealing with people who actually can't access written text.
Yeah, and we'll pick up on, I'm doing a session after the break on funding, and we can pick up some of these issues then.
So it's a major issue.
Yeah, I mean, can I, if you like, go back to the moral pulpit for a moment? My personal view is that if you're looking at a complex across our society, of which I've rather implied that literacy and numeracy deficiencies are part, and an important part, but not the whole, then I think you don't actually solve the problems of our society by merely creating a kind of series of semi-static comparators where people can move across lines through accessing qualities or bits of funding or support, and then, you know, the box is ticked and it's over. I actually think what you need is to create in people the kind of aspiration that is about getting on and progression, and making sure above all that you don't have people who've got to a certain level and you then say, that's it. And I think this will, I mean, it applies to the benefit system as well, and what is being looked at with universal credit. It's saying, you get into a job, we're not going to penalise you on day one when you've flipped over. And the inference is that you will then be able to acquire further skills and develop in your employment. And you then reach a more interesting and fulfilled and responsible life, which you can then enjoy later on. And, I mean, I happen to be doing a separate study on advancement to advanced level four and above apprenticeships. And it's again about trying to create this readiness. If you don't always do it on day one because the funding isn't there, that at least people are ready to take the next step in due course and are not blocked from taking it because they've made some ill-conceived decision or they've been throttled by the funding system at some point. So I think right across these areas, there's a huge amount to be done in which you're saying, does it encourage people's self-motivation and their advancement, or does it frustrate it?
Okay, thank you. We're going to take a break now. Before we do that, though, I'm going to put our speakers on the spot, and I'm going to ask them for one word, or we can push it to two or three words if you need to answer to a question, because what we've not talked about today, and I think it is relevant, is marketing. Because I think when we talk about the post-compulsory education phase, and we've heard about how numeracy can often be quite off-putting and so on, it's about the sell, to some extent, I would imagine, of actually encouraging individuals to want to participate, whether they are having to contribute themselves or not. We are obviously operating mainly today talking about the adults. And a lot of money has been spent through the life of some of that nine-odd billion has been spent through the life of the Skills for Life campaign. Any of us remember the Gremlins campaign? So clearly that, I imagine, is on the agenda in terms of what comes next. So in a one or two words, we'll take that particular campaign as an example. Your view on whether that type of approach in terms of campaign is a good one or whatever word you want, or bad one or whatever word you want to use on the spot. Karen first.
Thank you. I'm not sure that there will be national funding for a national marketing. So I think that it's up to other organisations to see how it can be done. I've always felt that, I think you talked about celebrities, but I actually think, this is more than one word, but the way of integrating through a storyline on a soap opera or something where it is real, that people who relate to this can actually see people learning, taking the plunge and doing things and progressing as a natural thing to do, or even at that reading and adding up is a natural thing to do in life. Make that more of a thing where they come across it every day and even on things they watch on television.
Okay, thank you. Views on Gremlins?
Yeah, funnily enough, we screened Gremlins the other day for our advancement or adult education alongside the Microsoft bit. And, I think we all started with Microsoft and ended up with Gremlins and Bob Hoskins and all that. I think you do need to embed it, as Karen has said, in that sort of program. I mean, always remember the Archers was meant to teach farmers how to farm originally. A bit more complicated now, but it is actually interesting because it's about navigating their way in modern life, which is also relevant. I think if I wanted a one line, not a one word, it would be, you can do it and we'll help.
Yeah.
And if I wanted a role model, I think I would get David Beckham, only for his wonderful remark when there was a suggestion that he might be transferred to a Japanese club. And they said, the journalist said to him, "Now, David, are you on are you learning Japanese?" And he replied, "No, I'm still on English." Yeah. Which was good.
Can I put you on the spot? If not Gremlin, which celebrity, Helen? How about that?
I wanted... not Gremlin, which celebrity.
I'll come back to you.
Okay. Don't come back to me. But I think the Gremlins, we know they succeeded, but it's somehow we need to get the quality into every corner behind it. The Gremlins succeeded, but there's many stories of people who saw the advert, got the message, but couldn't write the phone number down in time.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah. Yes.
And heartrending stories of people who did get the phone number down, or somebody got down, who phoned up and were told, "Oh, we can help you brush up your English, but you mean you really can't read?"
Right.
Yeah. You know, because we're quite good at creating a good marketing thing, but we're not yet good enough at making sure that every person that comes forward actually gets a good... And it's in, you know, we haven't put enough emphasis on making sure that our advice and guidance workforce and our teaching workforces are all as good as they can be. We know what the standards should be, but there's a kind of slightly laissez-faire approach. It's back to my point at the beginning, is that somehow, well, anybody could be on the phone line. Well, no, actually, you're dealing with people who may have 30 years of not admitting their problem.
Yeah.
And actually, the person who picks up the phone the first time they decide to talk to someone has to really know how to do it.
No, that's a very good point.
We are dealing in an area where the quality of the pedagogy and the professional knowledge is more important than it is in other areas of education. And it's yet that seems to be upside down, a perverse link. So we've got lots of great celebrities. I mean, yes, it would be great to get David Beckham to do more. Scott Quinnell's been great on the quick reads. And I'm sure we can. But we need to find ways of getting the pedagogy and quality into a blended approach so that people can make their learning fit their lives. Those of us that are online, on broadband and so on, you know, we can go on online late at night, find things we need to know in terms of enhancing our own lifelong learning. Mm. We need to find ways of making that accessible for people who are learning to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Final word over to you. You can talk about anything you like now, but it's got to be one word.
Okay. Well,
because my panels can't count, which is a bit
two words then for me. I think the two words for me are relevance and opportunity, really. And that's it. I mean, if you want a celebrity after watching Beyonce the other night, that's probably my celebrity. Never mind.
We'll end on that positive note. Okay, thank you. Can we just show appreciation again to our excellent panel from this morning?